truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
Phil here on the world famous Phil Hendry Show, and we got a little bit of a technical malfeasance here. So if we took a little bit of time getting back to the air, we apologize. Suddenly I can't hear anything. Suddenly I'm stone deaf. It could have been the OxyContin. Maybe it wasn't. It's a little joke. Probably
you're gonna get in trouble with the that'll be bad.
Why don't you quit telling me when I'm gonna get in trouble for stuff? Okay, back me up, man. Back me up, baby. Anyway, welcome back to the show. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, and a couple of more things to get to. One of them was, as I had mentioned to you earlier, an interesting article that had been released today by Politico. I don't know if you heard this or not. I don't know. There's maybe people jumping up and down, and they're singing the blues, or some people are really, really happy. I could have well imagined that
Thundercrack
is really happy. She's, as you know, why are we saying that? Well, we have made the public statement that if Michelle Bachmann will indeed slit her wrists, we'd be happy to back off of our support of the public option. Because she did say, and I believe I have the direct quote, ah, yes, here it is. For those of you who are at home looking at our video feed, and if you were watching our video feed tonight, you'd see me holding up the article, Bachmann, slit our wrists, be blood brothers to beat health care reform. I will back off of my support of health care reform, Congresswoman Bachmann, if you'll slit your wrists. Thank you. What you think about that, huh? Well, in any event, maybe Obama got the word, too, and maybe he'd like to see that happen, because according to Politico, aides to President Barack Obama are putting the final touches on a new strategy to help Democrats recover from a brutal August recess by specifying what Obama wants to see in a compromised health care deal and directly confronting other troubled spots, West Wing officials tell Politico. Obama is considering detailing his health care demands in a major speech as soon as next week when Congress returns from their August recess. You know, some of these recesses, and I understand them, but even a guy like me, Phil Hendry, who is not vitally needed in the public discourse, in the public arena, I'm not a vital part of making life go. I'm an entertainer. And what does that mean? I could take the whole year off, man, and the world is going to keep right on turning, my brother, you know. I mean, there's some people like to listen to me, but it ain't like anybody's going to be out there slitting their wrists right alongside of you-know-who.
Thundercrack.
That's right. Anyway, Obama is considering detailing his health care demands in a major speech as soon as next week when Congress finally gets up off their fat, fat, fat asses and comes back from the August recess. And although House leaders have said their members will demand the inclusion of a public insurance option, Obama has no plans to insist on it himself, according to these White House officials who were talking to Politico. And if Obama knew you were talking to Politico, your ass is fired. What do you think of that? We're entering a new season, senior advisor David Axelrod said in a telephone interview. Oh, I guess he isn't being fired. He's pretty public. It's time to synthesize and harmonize these strands and get this done. We're confident that we can do that. But obviously, it is a different phase. We're going to approach it in a different way. The president's going to be very active. Top officials privately concede the past 6 weeks have taken their toll on Obama's popularity. But the officials also see the new diminished expectations as an opportunity to prove their critics wrong by signing a health care law, showing progress in Afghanistan, and using this month's anniversary of the fall of Lehman Brothers to push for a crackdown on Wall Street. In other words, President Obama is very ambitious. There's a lot of stuff he wants to do. But number one, right there at the top of the charts, health care reform. If he gets his ass handed to him on this one, what else is this cat going to be able to get accomplished? On health care, Obama's willingness to forego the public option is sure to anger his party's liberal base. But some administration officials welcome a showdown with liberal lawmakers if they argue they would rather have no health care law than an incremental one. So, What are they talking about now? What they're talking about is that Obama would like to see a health care reform put into place that is incremental. That is, we'll start out with the National Health Care Exchange. You can keep your health insurance. You will have a National Health Care Exchange to find the most affordable health care that you can. And if backing off of the national plan, which would be that third rail, is indeed a part of what Obama's planning to talk about, then obviously they're going to be backing off of any requirement, federal requirement, that people have health insurance. In Canada, it's required that you have health insurance. In Great Britain, it is required that you have health insurance. In the United States, it's required that you have auto insurance. See, so that's our priorities, you know. Health insurance? No. Auto insurance? Yes. Why is that? Because America, being America, it's more important. We can do what we want. You can't run over another guy. You know, if you kill somebody else. The reason why you have to have auto insurance in America is so that you don't kill somebody and not wind up paying for it. Or wreck their car and not wind up paying for it. Or do some damage to somebody else and not wind up paying for it. It's not really about your own well-being. Many of us take out auto insurance that does cover our cars, that covers the damage to our own automobile. We've got second driver insurance. We've got all kinds of stuff, man. Third driver insurance. We've got bumper-to-bumper insurance. We got the liability that's even more than what the government requires. The government requires liability insurance. The state governments, there's no federal auto insurance requirement, but state governments around the country, and I can't think of one that doesn't require auto insurance. If there is one, I'd like to know. You have to have liability, that is, the ability to pay for what happens to the other guy. Okay. In fact, I was just talking to a friend of mine who had been hit by an individual, had been hit and very seriously injured by some dumbass, okay, who was driving like a jackass and hit this person and grievously injured them. And his liability insurance required by the state of California covered, I think, somewhere in the neighborhood of 15 G's of the medical costs to this person. Only 15 grand, that was it. That was his liability, okay? And the medical bills, the medical expenses, were well over $100,000. So, boy, that liability insurance, that's, hey, there's a great idea, huh? But we don't want to pass a law requiring people have more coverage. Why, that would be un-American. So when your ass gets run over by somebody and they have 15 G's of liability and your health insurance bill comes to like 500 grand, good luck. Rot's a ruck there, Yankee. Anyway, we've been saying all along, says Axelrod, as he carefully chose his words. Actually, this is an unnamed aide, so this is an anonymous source. So this is a guy that could get fired. We've been saying all along the most important part of the debate is not the public option, but rather ensuring choice and competition. There are lots of different ways to get there. Well, look, there's no point in having health insurance unless everybody has it, in demanding health insurance, in putting through health insurance reform, unless everybody's got it. Otherwise, we're paying for cats that don't have it, see? Now, they tried to put this into an incremental package, you'll remember. This was back, I think, when Bush was still president, where they said, well, let's insure kids that aren't insured. Let's make sure that they're insured. Right? And that one was not well received. See, nobody gets, those who are opposed to a comprehensive health care reform bill, they don't understand that the uninsured among us costs us money. So those who do understand that and for some unknown reason are happy to pay the higher health insurance premiums to cover uninsured people, what they say is, well, you know, most of them are illegal aliens, which is not true as well. That's not true either. Most of them are illegal aliens. And then they go to this one. Well, you know, Obama's new plan means we're going to be covering health insurance for illegal aliens. No, we're not. And with all due respect to the lady that called last hour, when she wanted to tell me about how unhappy Canadians were with their health care plan, and she'd been reading all those newspapers in Canada, every single newspaper she mentioned is published in Great Britain. Folks, I'm not trying to make an example out of anybody. I'm just asking the question, and it's a great question. And you want to know why a guy like Phil Hendry can say, on the one hand, he's in favor of strong national defense and aggressively prosecuting the war against terrorists and believes in the right to own and bear arms if necessary, which are decidedly conservative viewpoints. At the same time, Phil Henry's in favor of a national health care plan. Why? Because I take these things issue by issue. What is going to help my country? What's going to help my country? Not my rotten, stinking, decaying political party. Not my vile, foul, obscene political party. Foul and obscene to the point where people would choose their party's health over what's good for the country. We're trying to help our party. We're trying to help our president. That shouldn't be on the lips of any elected representative, whether the president is Bush or whether the president is Obama. When it comes to legislation to be enacted to aid this country in some way, what should be on the lips of these people, other than what is usually on their lips, and, you know...
Oh, man, that's going to be obscenity. Now, Phil, you're watching that SEC, they'll be all over you.
I didn't say the word, did I? I didn't say the word. What should be on their lips is the following. What's good for my country? Even if the Democratic Party and the Republican Party tomorrow cease to exist and every member is thrown into a prison camp and then eventually shoved into an oven, it doesn't matter to me so long as my country is a healthy place and a growing and a prosperous place. It is, after all, America, right? That should be what they're talking about. Not we're trying to help the president, which is what I heard Barbara Boxer say. The president doesn't need any help. The country needs help. Obama understands that. He understands that. He's got a bunch of, these lily livers, man, that surround him. My God, you'd swear to God, this poor guy probably thinks he's at the Girl Scout Jamboree with half of these people. He's trying to get something done for the country. You understand? It isn't about Barack Obama and whether or not we're helping him. It's about helping the country. The reason why I voted for Barack Obama is I want to help the country. The guy says we need a health care plan. So when you stand there and you want to pitch this to the American people, you don't say we're trying to help this president. That's what I meant when I said last week that he is a lightning rod. Don't make it worse. So you got this health care plan and you have no national option. That means there is no requirement to have health insurance. That means there are people who are still uninsured. That means there is no competition. The premiums go up. We're absorbing the cost of those uninsured people. And that's the system that people like Thundercrack there, Michelle Bachmann, would rather have in place than a national health care plan that might actually, you know, reduce the amount of our GDP that we're putting toward health care. That makes a whole lot of sense there, lady. Please slit your wrists. Please. You said you were going to do it. I promise you I will back off of my support for the whole health care plan, everything, in fact. I'll go away from the national option. The whole shooting match, if you'll cut your wrists like you said you would. You frightening, frightening woman. All right, coming up, the CIA says it will not do what?
Here.
The CIA says it will not reveal any more details on their interrogation programs, so you can kiss their bright red rosy on Main Street. Thank you very much. Our number is 877. Well, I better not give the phone number out because of the technical difficulties we're having. It is impossible for me to hear phone calls. It's, in fact, possible for me to hear Jason Ralph, which may be a blessing on any given day, but today it's not a good thing. Anyway, 877-876-PHIL if you want to practice dialing the number. And you can also watch us on our videocast at philhenryshow.com. We'll be right back.
Let it ride on. Phil Henry. Phil Henry.
All right, welcome back here. We got Bob Bakian, and Bob has written a book, Bob from Bakian Enterprises, and he's written a book on, well, it's an economic book, a book on the times we live in, the new world of being poor. And we're going to talk to Bob here in just a few seconds here in the World According To. But right now we have the Loon Alert, baby. This is where people are, or organizations or non-charity funds or whoever they are dancing on the edge of sanity and sometimes falling right into the abyss, man. And in this case, you guys in Oklahoma, like I said at the start of the show, you are being being played by your legislature there, because these people have got nothing better to do, apparently, than pass these jive-ass... Anyway, I shouldn't judge, should I?
No, you should allow them to have their side of the conversation.
Yes. Here's their side of the conversation. Although Governor Brad Henry vetoed similar legislation 10 days earlier, House members Monday again approved a resolution claiming Oklahoma's sovereignty. This purely political move was...
No.
All right, it wasn't purely... under House Joint Resolution 1003, House Concurrent Resolution 1028 does not need the governor's approval. The House passed the measure 7322. Now, what does this mean? What is this? What are they talking about here? According to Representative Charles Key of Oklahoma City, the governor's out of step. We're going to get this done. And what exactly is this? What does this mean? The HCR 1028, which if passed, would be sent to Democratic President Barack Obama and the Democrat-controlled Congress, would not jeopardize federal funds. But would, I don't know what it means. It means basically when they say that we're saying we're a state, okay? We're a state, and that's just what we are, a state. Well, good for you. That's, hey, you know, because they still want federal money. Apparently, this, according to Key, says it does not jeopardize federal funds, but it tells Congress to, quote, get back into their proper constitutional role. The resolution states the federal government should cease and desist mandates that are beyond the scope of its powers. What are those? What are those? What are you talking about, man? Enforcing federal law against, like, immigration? I mean, what are you being forced to do, man? States all over the place turning down federal money. Anyway, let's listen here. This is on the not-so-mainstream Alex Jones show. This is Charles Key of Oklahoma City calls for a nonviolent revolution against the federal government. Jesus.
Regarding the constitutional freedoms, civil liberties that we have, you know, they continue to cause the problem. They come back with alleged answers, supposed answers to it, their solutions, and they just take more freedoms away and take more of our property and our wealth away from us. It is time the people stand up. You know, what amazes me is how so few number of people can bring under submission or almost bring under submission a nation of over 300 million people. It's really amazing that we're allowing this to happen. And all we have to do is stand up. We don't have to have a violent revolution or anything. We just need to stand up and take back control.
What control have you lost, man? I'm way, you know something? I bet you if you were on a show where somebody actually debated you on this, you wouldn't be able to answer. You wouldn't be able to find your way to the men's room. What are you losing, man? What control don't you have? Representation, taxation without representation. I got news for you. I don't know whether you checked or not, Charlie, but you are a state representative, and you've got Congress people that go to Washington representing the state of Oklahoma. World famous Phil Henry show. We were just talking about, you know, I am all in favor of getting the country positioned for this new century ahead of us. It's really interesting, energy. I just want to talk about energy because, you know, there's a big discussion about green, and I think we've gotten off point. Green, 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 green. Green's fine, you know, like the green, green grass of home is fine. Green, green, they say it's green on the far side of the hill. That was a cool song, you know, but really this all started for me not, you know, after 9/11. This started during the Intifada, which was the Palestinian uprising in the late 1990s. And all hell was breaking loose in the Middle East. And it was really, if you guys remember, it was in the news every day. And everything crystallized for me at that time. I know we'd been talking, but never really serious about getting away from Middle East oil. But when all that stuff came down, it suddenly occurred to me, it's over, man. It's just over doing business in that part of the world, getting our energy from that part of the world. And that's when we started talking about the EV on the show. And of course, we were swimming upstream because nobody was ready at that time. And hey, they were selling SUVs and Hummers. And we'll be right back.
Phil Hendry. You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
In a minute, we got Bob Bakian, and he'll talk to us about The New World of Being Poor, and it's not a bummer book, from what I understand. Did you read it, Bud?
I thumbed through it. It's pretty good.
You thumbed through it?
Yeah.
Well, does that mean you read a chapter, or?
No, I just thumbed through it. I fanned the pages. It's pretty good. I looked at the pictures. What, you think I'm kidding?
Well, how the hell are you going to know what a book's about by fanning through it and looking at the pictures?
I did a review.
Anyway, we'll talk. My understanding is it's an uplifting book. It's a book about, it's a positive thing, The New World of Being Poor. I got to figure that one out when we get to it. Let's get to a phone call here in Charleston, South Carolina. And we have Laura. Laura, what's on your mind tonight on The Phil Hendry Show?
Hey, Phil, I was just calling in because I've really been sick of hearing about the marriage question just because I think liberals and conservatives alike are talking about it completely the wrong way. I think it really just comes down to the rights of two groups of people. I think the federal government should just stay out of the definition of marriage. It should just be straight up civil unions. Two people can get it, only two people, two human beings, and it protects. I mean, I had a grandmother that
any two human legal. Beings, any two human beings.
Yeah.
A mother and a son.
No, sorry, not related. I should clarify that. Not related.
All right, no. Because the question people ask me a lot. Yeah.
Just to protect the rights of people of this earth. I mean, in the United States, we have a lot of legal issues that could come up with health care. And, property and so forth. And if you're an elderly or if you are a homosexual, you need to be protected, too. And I think
I'll tell you
it comes down to the legal rights of both groups of people. I know a lot of churches have spiritual marriages on top of their civil unions anyway. I think the federal government should just define civil unions, and that's it.
I agree with you. And I'll tell you this. If the only thing that's the hang-up here is the word marriage on the part of people that oppose gay marriage, I would advise, and it's not my place to advise, but I would advise gay people, all right, give up on the marriage thing. If all they're hung up on is that word, then just make it a civil union.
I'm
afraid to say this, Laura, and I got a little taste of it from the call previous to you. I don't think it just boils down to that with a lot of these people.
Comes down to money. I think, really, churches are afraid to lose their tax credits, and I think a lot of homosexuals want to pressure a lot of churches, maybe because they got kicked out of one or whatever.
I agree.
They have sore feelings about it, and I think it really comes down to just a lot of fighting that's going to ruin a lot of rights.
Well, I think gay people would help themselves a lot if they'd recognize a couple of realities. Get rid of the word, and it's civil union. You have the same rights. They have to have the same rights that married people have. I think that's paramount. Secondly, though, addressing what you just said about churches, I think gay people have to recognize a church is a church. It's a set of beliefs. It may be whack. It may be nuts. Who knows, man? But it's their church. So I don't think that they can pressure, and I don't think they should pressure a church. I think that there are gay churches, and they do exist in this country. The Metropolitan Church here in Los Angeles is one where gay people are welcome and where they will perform these unions. But I don't think, that's a bad thing. But if they remove those two.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The thing is you can go start up your own church if you want to. Baptist, Methodist, they're all breakoffs of Catholic churches because they didn't like how the Catholic Church was running. If you don't like how your church is running, go make a new church.
I'll start one. I don't want to start a church. It's too much trouble, man. All those bulletins that you have to publish and, All right. Hey, listen, Laura, thanks so much for your call tonight. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Phil.
There's Laura in South Carolina, and let's get on Bob Bakian now is going to join us for the remainder of our segment here as we talk with Bob about this book that he has written, A New World of Being Poor. And, Bob, thanks for joining us as we talk about this very interesting book. Now, my what I heard was that essentially you are not you're not saying that poor is bad, right?
Well, that's exactly what we're not saying, Phil. We're not saying that poor is bad. We're saying that poor is a state that can literally enrich the individual. It can enrich an individual far more than this make-believe or makeshift or artificial world of being rich. Let me explain what I'm talking about, Phil, if you can follow me for just a moment. Being rich means that you are beyond what we call in our book the new world of being poor. You are beyond the I or the me. And the I, the me, is the ego, that is the individual, both physical, the corpulent, as well as the psychological, as well as, if you will, the spiritual. That's who you are, that's where you emanate from, that's where you begin, and that's where you end. The I and the me, anything extraneous to that, Phil, is an encumbrance. That's how we view the state of so-called rich or wealthy. You are encumbered by external. If you are poor, you are naturally less encumbered by external. And you begin to identify more closely with who and what we truly are as animals. This is not religious, by the way, Phil. A lot of people have attacked me on the basis of some new spiritual cult or New Age philosophy. This has got nothing to do with this. This is an economic philosophy.
And all right, let me interrupt you. You say this is purely an economic philosophy, although you start out by using a lot of those New Agey sounds, don't you?
We don't think it's New Age at all to recognize what a reality is. You're just talking about gay marriage. What's the reality? The reality is two people want to get married, whether they're gay or straight, or whether if gay and a straight wanted to get married. What's the law there? What's the reality? What's the extraneous information that we don't need? The extraneous information in that sense would be, well, I don't need to hear about a gay person wanting to marry a straight person. Is that something that people want to argue? Well, it's extraneous information. I don't think it would matter at all whether a gay married a straight, although legally, if you wanted to argue the point, it could be said by a lot in the gay world, well, that should not be allowed because that one person is gay and that's unnatural while the other person is straight. But that's extraneous. That's extraneous information.
Actually, I think that makes a lot of sense.
Well, it may be, and that might be another show for you, Phil. If you find a guy that wrote a book about that, I'd be happy to write a book about that. But let's get back to what we're talking about, the new world of being poor.
All right. So I wanted to just get the extraneous meaning what?
The extraneous, Phil, is the encumbrance. It's what we call when you're beyond the me and you are talking about things that are in your immediate sphere but are not a part of you, a part of your physicality, a part of your motion, a part of your relating, and a part of your activity. These are simply things that surround you. They circle or orbit you. If you are now free of those encumbrances, you are back to the me. You are back to the I. You are back to the what we call in a couple of our classes. When we start at a very primary level, Phil, if you can follow me here, we start with college-age people, and most college-age people are so already attracted to the sense of the ego, a sense of the I. So we tell them it's the hey you, and the reason why we call it the hey you is most college people, whether they're male or female, the first thing they see and admire during the day is what they see in the mirror. And so you don't want to say the me or the I with a college age or a young person because they can't identify as much as they can with the hey you. So when you look at that mirror and you say hey you, that is who you are.
All right, but let's get to this idea that what I'm hearing you say is stripping away everything you own.
No, I'm not saying stripping away. First of all, the first concept you have to get, if you can follow, and the people at home will follow me on this, you're not stripping away anything. All you're doing is a reassessment. It is a recalibration of your perception. It's a recalibration of your attitude. You see everything around you as something you don't own. It's not getting rid of it. You don't own it. If you are rich, you automatically assume and see everything within your immediate sphere as something that you own. And the very, very wealthy go so far as to say that they own other people. That's why you see a very high percentage of extremely wealthy men and women, even psychologically viewing their spouse as someone that they own, and maybe they do, depending upon what kind of a prenuptial they have. And I'm being very, very serious right now, Phil.
You're saying that extremely wealthy people even view their spouses as people they own?
They see that psychologically. As something they own. If you strip that away and you say, I don't own this anymore, it may be in my immediate sphere, but it's not part of the me or the I or the hey you if you are a part of that segment of the population that is so oriented toward the ego. So you now say, all right, I don't own these things. They are in my immediate sphere, but I don't own them. And to get out of bed in the morning, Phil, and to put on a pair of pants and to say, I'm putting on these pants, but I don't own them. They're not mine. They belong to someone else is a freeing. It's the beginning of the existential freeing of the person of the perception that you have of being rich. You may have a lot of things in your life. You may perceive yourself as owning those things, but the new way and the new world of poor, and it's very timely when we look at the state of the economy, is to say Someone else owns this, not me. I'm driving a car that someone else owns, not me. Let me put it to you this way.
Can I ask you, that someone else owns the pants I'm wearing?
Someone else owns those pants. Someone else owns the underwear that you're wearing. Let me give you another example. When you borrow a car to drive a car, you have a concept of only the I, the me, or the hey, you. You don't have any concept.
When you say the hey, you, is...
That's for the younger people.
All right.
You're driving that car, and you don't own that car. You may have borrowed that car. You might have rented that car. But you don't rent. In the new world of being poor, you don't own it. Someone else owns it. And you're driving that car. Now, have you ever seen a Jaguar that's got that nice burled wood in the interior?
I own a car like that, yeah.
All right, it's a beautiful car, but if you're driving it and it's not a part of you, someone else owns it. You could be smoking a cigar and you'd butt the cigar right on that burled wood, and it wouldn't matter to you.
It would matter to me.
It would matter to you, why?
Even if I was borrowing that car?
No, but the new world of being poor is simply someone else owns it. I don't own it. Someone else owns it.
What if I rented it, man?
No, you don't say that you rented it. Someone else owns it. So you'd butt a cigar in the burled wood. You'd spill a Coke on the seat. You'd get out, and you're free because you're oriented toward the. And I know what I'm saying. Just follow me with this, though, Phil.
No, you're telling me that if I borrow a car from somebody, I'm very careful with it because I don't want that person to think ill of me. I don't want to damage their car.
That right there. You said what I want everybody. Notice that Phil said, I don't want that person. There you go, into ownership. Someone else owns it. All right?
But what about friendship?
What about friendship? We all have friends. I have friends. I've got a great many friends. Even though I'm into the new world of being poor, I've got a great many friends.
And well, what do they think about you if you get into a car that you borrow and you spill Coca-Cola or you butt a cigar on the dashboard? What do they think of you?
Someone else owns that. Someone else owns that.
Someone else owns what?
Everything. But my attitude about the other. Someone else owns that. I'm about the me, the I, or the hey, you. The me, the I, the hey, you. Someone else owns the perception that the car is filled with garbage and cigar butts. Someone else owns that.
What if your friend says to you...
Now you're getting into the someone else. You see, I'm into the I...
No. I'm not getting into the someone else. I'm talking about if a friend of yours...
That's someone else. And someone else owns that. And in the case of my friend, he owns what his perceptions are. See, but in the new world of being poor, you are able to go through life. It's somebody else owns that. And
it sounds to me like you're saying go through life and just, you know, take a crap on everything because someone else owns that.
You just mentioned something. The excretory function. I don't want to, I know that you've got people listening. But let's talk about that for a minute. What do you own? You only own the I, the me, the hey, you. Those are the three states. Everything else you don't own.
Meaning if I...
If you were to do something like that in someone's car, if you were to do what you said in someone's car, right on the seat, someone else owns that. They bought it and paid for it. You can open the door and say, look what I did on your seat. You own that.
And what do I do then when the guy knocks my teeth down my throat and into my stomach? Someone else owns that?
Someone else owns that. So he owns what he did to you.
The teeth that are in my stomach, I own.
You're a humorous guy. You got to follow me here.
No. You, what I'm saying to you is, and I want to read your book, okay, Bob, but I'm running up against the time limit here. You're telling me that if I, you know...
All right, let's call it number two.
Whatever, man. And I leave that in a car, and a guy opens the door and says that. I say, hey, you own that?
That is the new way of poor is to... No, you don't say to him, you own that. You say, someone... If he says to you, who did that on my bucket seat? You say, someone else owns that, and you smile.
And then he punches me right in the mouth and knocks my teeth into my stomach.
Someone else, Phil, owns that. Guess who? The guy that punched you. The new world of being poor... It's a mindset, and I know you don't understand. It's a mindset, and I could talk for an hour. I could talk for 2 hours. We do seminars that go hour after hour after hour. We did a 26-hour seminar in Hawaii last month, and people walked out of this seminar as if they had just seen the rapture, as if they had just seen Christ come out down off the cross. And I'm not comparing it to Christianity. I would never do that. But I'm saying that people really get their eyes opened by this.
A 26-hour, is it just a matter of you just pounding away this philosophy?
I think in a lot of ways it's becoming acclimated. I think in a lot of ways it's osmosis. I think in a lot of ways it's simply marinating yourself. And in Chapter 3, we talk about the self-marination. So if the I or the you or the I or the me or the, excuse me, Phil, the I or the me or the hey you needs to be marinated. As if you're cooking yourself a steak. You ever marinated a steak?
Of course.
All right. You marinate the I, the me, or the hey you. And we call it you marinate it in the sauce of the other. The other is, that's someone else. Even if you butt a cigar on a dashboard, even if you, you know, do what you said you did in your friend's car. You know,
I didn't say I did that. I said that what if I did that?
I have misunderstood. I thought you said that you did do that.
Of course I didn't do that. You have to be insane to do something like that. I'm just saying...
Phil, I can tell, and I know you don't have a lot of time, I can tell that you are very much wrapped up in the other. You own things. You need to see everything around you. Somebody else owns that.
I have a radio studio. I own a company. I own equipment. I own a radio show. I own... You're telling me somebody else owns that, huh?
Well, don't they?
Well, in a lot of ways.
There you go. See, a lot of ways that I'm talking about.
Well, but no, but literally. I can't say...
Look, I have a website that I'm promoting. If I can give it to you, I'd love to do it. Febreze.com.
What does that mean?
I don't know. It was just written there on the screen.
All right. Thank you very much, Bob. We'll read your book, maybe.
What a pain in the ass.
Get him out of here, will you? Before I, you know, miss the break here?
Well, yeah, but don't you want to know what that website's about?
I don't know, man. I don't think I do. Didn't you do that in your friend's car? We'll be back with the stories we couldn't get to in a world-famous Phil Hendry show.
Phil Hendry. It's the Phil Hendry Show.
All right, let's get out of this night with a little taste of the stories that we couldn't get to. This from New Orleans, Louisiana. A man sued the New Orleans Police Department, claiming he was harassed by an officer who threatened to arrest him for wearing a black pinstripe skirt to municipal court. Jeremy Don Kerr is asking for $1 in damages. A ruling that his rights were violated and an order against barring access to public facilities because of gender stereotyping. The department hasn't been served with the lawsuit and hasn't answered the claim in court. Kerr filed the civil rights lawsuit last month. He says he finds skirts more comfortable than pants and wears them with button-down Oxfords or T-shirts. And he said, women love it. A 66-year-old man faces a felony armed trespassing charge after telling sheriff's investigators he was hunting a hog to celebrate his son's release from the county jail. That's what he was doing. He was hunting a hog to celebrate the thing. Deputies were called on Tuesday to the area of Glades Cutoff and Rangeline Roads in St. Lucie County. You got it. Florida. After someone reportedly spotted two men walking toward a pasture, one of the men was holding a rifle. A deputy saw two men walking in a grove at the intersection, but the men went between some trees after seeing his vehicle. About 10 minutes later, a sergeant saw a man with a rifle. The man grabbed his assault rifle and ordered the man to drop his weapon. The man, identified as Guillermo Cabello, told investigators he was hunting a hog to celebrate his son's release from jail.
Probably like a big celebration of a hog cook.
Well, maybe. Maybe they're going to have a big luau or something, huh?
What's that?
It's what they do in Hawaii.
Yeah, but that's Florida.
I know, man, I know, but that's... I don't know, you know?
Well, they're going to have a cookout with a hog.
I'm just telling you, Hawaiians do that too. Do you understand?
I don't... I'm not familiar.
Yeah, that's great, man. Okay, so anyway... one couple's prom plans go to pot after they're arrested for, you got it, smelling like marijuana, man. Anyway, they're accused of smelling like the weed. It happened at Brighton High School's prom on Saturday night in Denver, Colorado. I was really hoping to experience a really fun time with my friends. I really, really was, said student Sarah Heidman. They would not let me go past the front door. I was not allowed inside, ever. I guess she wasn't arrested. She was just accused of, you know, smelling like weed. Heidman and her boyfriend, Jason Schweinsberg, after they were told they smelled like weed, Schweinsberg laughed and said, Oh, that. No, we just haven't showered in a few days. They say they showed up at the... I'm kidding about that, of course. Wings over the Rockies Museum in Denver for the prom. Police at the door said they smelled marijuana on the couple. Heidman denies smoking marijuana. Her boyfriend is not a student and says he did smoke pot the morning of prom to manage long-term pain for a car crash. It's perfectly legal. He's registered with the state to use marijuana as medicine, but he says he didn't medicate that night, and a police search didn't find any marijuana on the couple or in their car. All right, in other stories here, David Slade, who is set to direct the third of the Twilight films, has apologized for past comments in which he criticized the vampire franchise. Let's listen to David Slade. He's going to be talking here about the film Twilight, which he thinks sucks, even though he's set to direct the third installment in this series of Twilight movies.
We were trying to find a movie to see, and we'd seen all the good ones, and there was nothing really coming out this weekend that we really fancied at all. Obviously, having directed a vampire film, and really gone for something completely different to the kind of romantic,
And we'll hear the rest of this tomorrow night.
Hormone teen vampire movie.
Phil Hendry.